You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
If you look for it, every day has cause for celebration. Celebrate a friend for their promotion, baby wedding, life thing. Celebrate yourself for keeping the couch warm. It's no easy feat, especially if it's a big couch. Or maybe you just want to celebrate living in 2023, where you can get beer, wine, and spirits delivered from Drizly in under 60 minutes without leaving said couch. So download the Drizly app or go to drizly.com. That's drizly.com and get your favorite drinks delivered today.
It's time to roll out the red carpet for, well, new carpet. Right now at the Home Depot, choose from hundreds of styles and colors from top brands. Plus, get free installation. So whether you want to brighten up your bedroom, add a little more cushion to your living room, or, yes, add some VIP flair to your hallway, you can get the perfect carpet to match your mood with free installation from the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Minimum purchase of $4.99. Exclusions apply. U.S. only. See store for details.
Hey, Holly.
Hey, Dave.
How are you today?
I'm great today. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. Welcome to the What Difference Does It Make podcast.
So happy to be here.
We're going international again.
We are.
Actually, is this the first time we're going international? As I'm looking at my countdown, I believe we are talking to a number of international people. This is going to be the first one of your friends. This is an actual friend of yours.
This is actually a friend of mine, someone I've known for many, many years, or paths have crossed because of the radio business. His name is Chris Modig. We met when he was programming an MTG, a Riks Radio in Sweden. Radio people or music people may know him as Swedish Chris, which he will get into during the podcast. Should I say mix master?
He is a mix master.
Master of the mixes.
We don't call him MC Swedish Chris, but the stories we're going to hear are really cool. So I want to remind people to leave a review. Reviews are extremely helpful to us. I know it's work. It's just extra. I'm bad at this too. I don't leave. Do you leave reviews, Holly?
I have left reviews on podcast. Not regularly, but if something strikes me, I will leave a review.
Perfect. So if this podcast strikes you, 5 stars. Like Joy B says with a headline, love it, !! I love this podcast, 4 exclamation marks. So much fun. 2 thumbs up. So thank you, Joy B. Here's another one. Says great stuff. Now with music, which we're doing now, right?
Yep.
This one, another 5 stars. One of my favorite podcasts just got better. 2 exclamation marks. Why? Because they're playing music! !! And yes, it makes a huge difference. Dave and Holly are two cool cats chatting about music just like they're your friends. So thank you. Thank you for taking that extra step and giving us a review.
And by the way, thank you. My takeaway from that is that I'm a cool cat, which I never knew. So thank you.
Indeed.
And you too, Dave.
Yeah, well, thank you. You are one cool cat.
But I already knew that.
All right. Well, two cool cats are getting into this next podcast with Swedish Chris. Let's get started right now on the What Difference Does It Make podcast. Are those carts? Hold on a second.
Recognize the studio?
Yeah. Is it real or is it a backdrop?
It's the old K-Rock studio in Pasadena.
That's hilarious. No wonder I am seeing carts. I was like, wait, what's happening?
And there's a suicidal tendency sticker somewhere.
I see that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Where'd you get this?
From. You're not actually.
This is an old picture. I got it way back. It's from the internet somewhere. But I'm just going to switch. Let me see. Where do I do that? Oh, this is my studio.
You know what? I'm not as impressive. I'm sorry. We're going to have
all right.
The keyboards and guitars, are those yours?
Yes. They fired me from the radio station about 10 years ago, and I decided to make my own studio to make some more music. But I never got around to that because they hired me back, you know, 6 months later. But now I have a studio. I can do whatever I want. Remixes, stuff, you know. I can even connect to our radio station and do it from here.
And that's how you got your start, right? You were doing remixes for Power?
No. I came to LA. I was 16. I heard Swedish Eagle and K-Rock. So I called the radio station and said, I'm a DJ from Sweden. I like to talk to Swedish Eagle. And after, you know, calling for about 2 months or so, he called me back. And I asked him how I could get a job as a DJ in LA. You know, I wanted to be a club DJ, not radio DJ. Mm-hmm. And he told me you have to be over 21. There's no way. And I told him I'll send you a cassette. So I did. And he promised to listen to it. And took another, you know, month or so before he listened to that. And then he just called me back and said, you know what? On that cassette, there's a medley of Duran Duran. Where did you get that? And I said, you know, it's on, you know, it's the first track on the cassette because I screwed up a couple of times. And he goes, what? And I said, well, I mixed it. You know, I can't mix faster than 30 seconds of a song. That's how long it takes to change the record and, you know, cue the other one and then, you know, mix it. And he was like, no, you know what? Bring your records, come down to the radio station and show me. And I did. I came in there and people, you know, were watching me mix the songs together. And that's the first time I heard about a reel to reel, that I actually could stop my mix.
Yeah.
And then redo the parts that didn't turn out good and splice them together. And that was, you know, like a game changer. And just a couple of days later, the mix was done and I was on, you know, K-Rock introducing the Duran Duran Megamix. And I believed it was the number one requested song of 1983.
How about that?
So that's how I got into K-Rock.
So what were you doing before the reel-to-reel?
I was just live mixing.
So you were just...
actually changing records.
Yeah, like physically moving. Yeah.
Yeah.
Were you marking up certain areas? So you weren't marking up your disc, the vinyl?
No, I knew exactly where you know.
You knew exactly where to place the needle?
So, yeah, I would look at the label sometimes. Yeah. But I would mark, like, the first sound on a vinyl, I would mark with a little, you know, black line usually, but not more than that. And then I used the cassette player,
right?
And you know, try to pause it on the beat and then let it go on the beat.
Yeah,
and that sometimes worked, sometimes not. And I started doing those mixes, and I did It was the Duran medley, the Thompson Twins medley. It was Erasure. It was the Depeche Mode medley. It was a New Order medley. Did a bunch of those. I did the special version for K-Rock with Rock Me Amadeus. Then A&M Records called K-Rock up and said, you know, what version are you playing? This song, you know, we pressed 40,000 copies of this single and it's not moving.
Yeah.
And you're playing something else. And they said, well, that's the Swedish Chris version. And they called me down to the old A&M Records on La Brea.
Charlie Chaplin Studios.
Yeah. And I was in there for 2 days and did the American edit. And it went number one.
Crazy. So where did you get the initial idea to start remixing? Who influenced you to do this?
I mean, I was 13 when I won a DJ contest at, you know, like a local kind of like a YMCA kind of youth place in back in my hometown in Sweden. And I wanted to be a DJ. And there is this guy called Klaus of Jägerstam, Klabbe. Was his name. He was doing radio shows, or kind of like the only DJ radio show that was on, you know, Swedish public service radio. And I wanted to be like him. He used to be the bass player for ABBA.
Oh, okay.
And he did this show that inspired me, you know, made me want to be a DJ. So I was practicing at home with a microphone and a turntable, you know, announcing records.
So how old were you when you were on the air the first time?
I had just turned 17. And that was a strange thing. You know, then some of the jocks wanted me to come out with them when they did nightclubs and stuff. And they said, you know, we'll bring Swedish Chris and he can play the records. Well, he can't get in. But I started working nightclubs in Sweden when I was 15, getting in the back door, promised just to stay in a DJ booth.
Right.
And I kind of did the same way with K-Rock as well. Whenever I went with them, nobody asked me. We walked through the back door. Stayed in the DJ booth and then left, you know.
What did you see on the dance floor? What were you able to, I guess you were able to gauge what was getting reactions and, you know, like,
But they would let me play. I mean, the jocks at K-Rock, and it's, you know, usually it was Swedish Eagle. I mean, he was more interested in ladies, you know, being Swedish Eagle and Richard Blade and whoever I, you know, went out with. They just said, you know, Chris, you play the music and I'll take care of the audience. So that was kind of fun.
But perfect.
Yeah. Mr. J's in El Monte and Club Hollywood and Florentine Gardens and the Old Palace. That was fun.
So you had family out here in L.A. Is that why you moved out here?
No, my dad came home one day and said, what do you think about moving to America? And I go, well, what do you mean? We had been on a vacation, you know, going to, you know, we went to Disney World and stuff. And he just came home and said, I've been offered a job in California. For a construction company, it's going to be for at least 3 years. Should the family go or not? You know, let's have, you know,
yeah,
wow. Family vote. And we decided to go. My brother moved back just after a couple of years. My sister still lives in Monrovia. And I spent 10 years there, so.
You were 15, 16? So that, like, up
16 when I came.
And that's tough sometimes, you know, moving in.
It was tough.
Yeah.
You know, I came to the crowd at La Cañada High School, which is, you know, an upper class, you know.
Certainly is.
Stuck up. You know, I wasn't even an exchange student. Nobody showed me anything anywhere. I didn't, you know, it was just me and my brother sitting out in the quad with, you know, knowing nobody. And nobody talked to us until I got on K-Rock and we had this school dance and they introduced me as Swedish Chris from K-Rock. And
nobody knew.
The next week I was Mr. DJ at La Cañada High.
Everyone wants to be your friend.
Yeah.
Suddenly it's revealed Peter Parker is Spider-Man. You're, you know.
Yeah. He was like, do you have tickets for Duran Duran?
Yeah.
What do you mean? Can you take me out? You mean for tickets to Duran Duran? No.
And band reactions? I mean, you got played on K-Rock. So I would imagine, you know, Duran Duran hears this and, you know, they want to.
Yeah, I have on my wall here, I have the mix I did for Pet Shop Boys. It says, to Swedish Chris, all the best and thanks for a brilliant mix, Neil Tennant, Chris Lowe. As, you know, things like that. I just realized I saw a clip on YouTube when Spandau Ballet was at the old K-Rock studio in 85, I think. And you can see me peek out the door in that video and I still have the cover signed by all the, you know, band members. Shared the bathroom together with Adamant.
Yeah.
Answered the request line with Bono. I was too young to actually understand. I was just an intern. I came in the afternoons. I was allowed to, you know, answer the request line and write some requests and stuff. And that was it. You know.
It's probably better that way, I think, to come in not really knowing anything, because then you're not jaded. You're just, you know, you're just you, and everything is genuine. Everything that comes out is genuine.
Yeah. And we were kind of told to respect the artists. Just, you know, if they walk up and talk to you, that's, you know, that's fine. But sometimes, you know, somebody would walk by and we would go, who's that? I don't know. That's some new band. That guy looked weird. Oh, he's, you know, he's a singer of, you know, whatever. So.
But yeah, it sounds like you're more focused on the work.
I was a music nerd.
Yeah.
I would hang out at Pooh Bahs in Pasadena, trying to get my hands on the first imports that got in, you know, on a particular day of the week. So
Freddie Snakeskin was the PD, right? At that time?
Not Rick Carroll.
Rick Carroll. Okay.
Rick Carroll was the PD and Larry Groves was the music director.
Okay.
Scott Mason was head of engineering. Snakeskin was doing afternoons, I think.
Yeah. Like three to seven.
And Jed was doing evenings and Dusty Street midday.
So you would do road trips with the music director, Larry Groves, or what?
No.
Or you just go out on your own and just dig through the piles of poobahs?
Yeah. I just wanted, you know, I found a bunch of stuff. And then Eagle was one of the, he was also, you know, very into imports and trying to find the hottest songs first. And he was on the air, so he, you know, he played all this stuff. But I got my foot in at a nightclub called Marilyn's in Pasadena. And that was a teen club where it was 16 and up. So that's where I started DJing at least once a week, which was great. And then I needed all these records. So I spent all my money on records.
We are going to talk about 1984. I gave you a list of songs, songs 40 to 31 we're going to count down. I have a feeling you might have remixed a couple of these songs, and so you might have some nice insight into what we're talking about here.
Yeah, Simple Minds, I did a medley of with Waterfront in it, yeah.
Okay, so explain these mega remixes, because is it kind of like... Back in, I think in the 70s, we had this, there was a top 10 song called Stars on 45, where it was like, yeah, it was like a medley of songs that just kind of morphed one after the other, kind of segued.
But that medley was played and it had a backtrack with the beat.
Yes.
Okay. I did that. It's just the original recordings blended together. And I figured out a way to set the actual speed of the song so I could actually also, as close as I could, try to get them in tune.
Right. Okay. Because they're all in different keys.
Or actually find parts of the songs where there were no key, if you will. It was just drums or stuff, and try to use the breaks to blend them together. So it's basically a medley of one band. I met Neil Tennant and Chris Lowe at here in Sweden when they had a concert a few years ago, and they told me about an interview they did with Richard Blade about how the Pet Shop Boys medley became the kind of promo tool for the entire album, the Police album.
Wow.
Because I used so many songs from the Police album, so basically a lot of listeners got exposed to so many songs off of the album, so it took off. So that was fun to hear. I had no idea. I didn't even know that they knew about me.
Sometimes you're better off dead. There's a gun in your hand that's pointing at your head. You think you're mad, too unstable, kicking in chairs and knocking down tables in a restaurant in a West End town. Call the police, there's a madman around, running down underground to a dive bar in a West End town.
In a West End town, a dead end world, the East End. We'll be right back.
Dave, I think that might have been what you were asking. How it works, when you do a mix, so say you're at K-Rock and you do a mix, a Pet Shop Boys mix, yeah. Here's it, and they'll come to you. I always wondered, like, with rights, and is there ever
any... We're not releasing anything. I mean, it becomes an artwork. And even back then, it was, you know, nobody told the radio station they couldn't cut a song short. Nobody told the radio station they couldn't segue two songs together. Yeah. Well, I just segued 12 Duran Duran songs in 10 minutes. So why should they care? It's just, you know, the original recording, we play the songs, it's just that we blend them together.
And they were generally 10 minutes? How long was the mega mix?
The medleys were like 10 minutes.
Yeah. And K-Rock played all 10 minutes?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's crazy. At any time of the day?
Any time of the day. Yeah. The Duran mix, they played like 3-4 times a day.
That's amazing. They could do no wrong back then. So yeah, you play more Duran Duran for 10 minutes. I mean, I'm sure K-Rock was like, great. We play Duran Duran 24 hours a day if we could. Yeah. Okay, so as you can hear, we're really excited to talk to Swedish Chris about his days at K-Rock. And we're going to get more into talk about his past, talk about the music. But, you know, you got to take a break once in a while. So let's do that, and we'll be right back.
Welcome back to the What Difference Does It Make podcast with our special guest, Swedish Chris.
Number 40 is Simple Minds Waterfront. What's your opinion? How do you feel about Simple Minds? Were you exposed to them through your mix? Was that the first time or had you heard of them before?
No. I fell in love with Love Song all the way back in 81. That was the first time I heard about Simple Minds. And... one of my all-time favorite albums is New Gold Dream.
It is an amazing
album. And I was actually a little bit disappointed when Sparkle in the Rain came out. The melodies weren't as strong. I've always loved strong melodies. I also felt like, for example, Waterfront had a bass line. It was just doon, 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 doon. Nothing happened.
Mm-hmm.
So Waterfront is not one of my favorite Simple Minds songs, but they're definitely one of my you know, favorite 80s bands. Of all time, or of 80s.
Yeah. Yeah, I would imagine doing these mega mixes, you kind of were looking for the hook immediately that you can put into these things.
Waterfront doesn't really have a hook. I just recently, right before the pandemic, kind of closed everything down in March of last year, I went to see Simple Minds in Stockholm. It was a great concert. You know, 2 days later, they closed everything down.
So that was your last show.
That was the
last show before the pandemic. Absolutely.
We always ask.
I have everything by Simple Minds.
Do you? Okay. Apparently, according to Chris, they still got it. So
they're still alive and kicking.
They're still alive and kicking.
Well, it's not, Jim Kerr is doing the best he can, but it's not like seeing Mick Jagger still on the stage.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But Jim is still younger, but he had a hard time keeping up for, you know, a 2-hour show.
Oh, is that right? Yeah. I would imagine, though, like if I saw the band, I would be shocked at even because I didn't buy their albums. I would be like, oh, I know this song. Oh, I know this one. Oh, yeah, this one is a great song, too. You know, it's just I'm sure it's like a greatest hits type of thing, especially now later in life, you know, as they go through their catalog.
Yeah, but they've made some new albums as well.
Yeah.
They just released, an album a couple of years ago. I think there's a new one coming up too.
Do you care if a band like Simple Minds releases new music? Is this important to you?
Yeah, I do. but I usually get disappointed that it's not as good as it was back then. That's always, you know, the tricky part. Either, you know, either you try to sound like you did back then so you get your old fans back, but that means that your sound is pretty dated compared to the other stuff today. Or if you go with the times and you kind of update your music, you're going to lose your old fans and maybe not get new ones because they don't have a relationship to where whatever you did back then. Depeche Mode is a band that actually, you know, done great going through the decades.
Sure.
But other bands just, you know, it just doesn't work. It is not only the type of instruments you use and the way, you know, the chord progression and all of these things. It becomes a difference in songwriting even between the 80s and today.
Yeah.
So you can use today, a lot of artists use the old 80s sounds, but right. Even if, you know, the sounds themselves are old, they make it sound new because the chord progression and the songwriting is different and more up to date.
For sure. Are you familiar with Saint Vincent? Do you like her? She's got this new album that's coming out. It's called Daddy's Home. It's like an ode to the 70s. It's like, sounds like the 70s, but it's in 2021.
I haven't heard that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You might look into what she's doing. I'm a huge fan of hers, but she's kind of touched on exactly what you were talking about. Like, you know, looking back, but also moving forward as well. It's tricky. All right. Someone who continually pushed forward. And I wonder if you have a mega mix of Prince. I mean, this is, the song number 39 is When Doves Cry, the greatest song.
Not a mega mix. I mean, Prince's songs are too difficult to blend together. They're brilliant pieces of art. A lot of other songs in, you know, that bands make, you know, they usually have a similar theme and orchestration throughout, you know, not only album by album, but, you know, album to album. But Prince changes everything. Yeah. Every time. It is so difficult. I mean, if you take 1999, going to Purple Rain, going to Sign of the Times, they're all different. And they're really, really tricky to put, you know, together in some way. And he doesn't use drum machines and time coding in the same way. So the tempo drifts all over the place.
Steve tried, so it sounds like.
There are no records, you know, that I know of that you can easily segue together by Prince. Yeah. Sign of the Times, I think, is a good example. But the other songs are all over the place.
Probably intentional on Prince's part.
Well, I think he played the music, and it wasn't important that, you know, that you should keep 110 BPM throughout a song. If he wanted to increase the tempo of the song for the chorus to kind of pick up the energy of the song, he would do that. And the DJs would go crazy.
He did a remix of When Doves Cry. He's done remixes of, you know, for Erotic City, same thing.
But there is no really good remix of When Doves Cry. There are some great drums in that song, and I wish there was a break somewhere, but it's not. It's not. I even tried to re-edit the song to get a long break in the middle, and I finally got it, but it's, you know, I wish I just had the drums. But it's, you know, Prince is one of the artists that you wish that you could listen to the 24 track or 48 track or whatever he used and just listen to how the different pieces go together.
It's a magic act. It's just.
It is.
You also commented that you think that this is that When Doves Cry is the best song from the 80s. Is this the best, your favorite Prince song? Or
I know it blew my 17-year-old. Ears, just my mind when the first time I heard that, I would put it at the top.
I didn't know that. I just learned something new about you. Chris, favorite? Can you pick a favorite Prince song?
It's this one or 1999, I would say. But this one also blew my mind. Oh, I got the promo single from Swedish Eagle.
Oh, that
was purple vinyl.
I've got the purple single.
Yeah.
But yeah, I actually remember like when I was in the car, like the exact position I was, like where I was. I was on Victory Boulevard when it first came on the air, Kiss FM, and I almost stopped the car. Like, you know, I was a fan of Prince, but I was like, "What? Wait, what's happening? What is it?" That was like one of the first things I remember hearing. Like upon first hearing it, where it's like, "Oh, this is a game changer right here." You know, even as a kid, like this is just insane.
But for K-Rock, Prince wasn't always a given.
No, we are shocked he played this. So were you were there at the in 84. What was there a discussion of whether Prince is K-Rock worthy?
This song, I think, was just too good. Yeah. It was just too good. It had those, Simmons drums or Lynn drums or whatever. It had a different sound than the 1999 album. It was less R&B-ish, if
rock,
you will.
A little more rocky.
Yeah.
Well, that was it, because he had a mainstream movie coming out. So he was trying to be one step ahead and yet still be mainstream.
Yeah, but the big hit for K-Rock was Erotic City. That was the one they played over and over again.
That blew my mind when I heard it the first time.
K-Rock loved flipping over the looking to the B-side, as we will discuss in a short while. Oh, sure, this song is good, but let's see what's on the other side. Let's play that, and then let's play it a lot.
Yeah.
Amazing. Let's go to number 38. This is Blamage. Don't tell me I don't get Blamage, but, you know, it sounds like they're trying to impersonate Depeche Mode to me. This is the third of three songs from 1984. You must have been working with them in a little bit.
It was the first radio interview I did with an artist.
Yeah.
As I remember it, they came to K-Rock and I could make, you know, of an interview for Swedish radio for a short while. And I really liked Blamange.
Yeah.
Living on the Ceiling was a big hit. And I loved that kind of Asian Indian kind of, the used sitars and the tabla drums in all of their songs, more or less. They had some kind of, you know, theme going through their music. But it's true, they never really had a big hit. But I wouldn't compare it to Depeche Mode. There weren't enough synthesizers. It fit K-Rock very well and gave them some cred, I guess. Mm-hmm. But, you know, working with radio today, we sometimes call songs for fillers. We know they're not going to break big, but they're good songs, and they, you know, you play them for a while and then they, you know, disappear. I don't think anyone is going to put, you know, Games Above My Head or Don't Tell Me on, you know, the top compilation from the 80s single, you know.
I'll stay with you until the end. I'll say you let me be your friend. I'll say you let me in the end. I just want to be your friend. Sure, I should be high above. I climbed the mountain, reaching for the skies. And all too soon, I jump the moon and find I'm losing my mind. Don't tell me I'm the howling wind. Don't tell me you're the wounded star.
What's your speculate as to why you don't think they made it bigger?
I think they were too kind of artsy to, you know, you need that hook. I mean, Don't You Want Me by Human League. Ding, 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 ding. Depeche Mode just can't get enough. You have so many songs that have that hook. Living on the Ceiling has kind of a great melody, you know, but none of the other songs. Where's the melody in Don't Tell Me? A lot of the 80s songs, you know, they had the chorus, and then following the chorus came the melody. And they usually put the melody in the, you know, the beginning of the song, then came the verse, then came the chorus, and then came the melody. But no, they didn't. So they didn't have that hook.
I guess that's true, but that's a lot, you know, for three songs, Dave, right, this year?
Yeah,
no. But I guess that was it.
But like you said, they fit into the K-Rock sound. So let's keep playing it. They're still kicking, actually. They released an album last year called Mindset. They have an ambient album that actually came out this year that's available. Yes, they said, we're excited to announce the third installment in Blamage's exploration of ambient music and imaginary film soundtracks. Nil by Mouth 3 will be released as a limited edition CD, 1,000 copies, and that came out in March. All copies will be signed by Neil Arthur. And still available, $16 if you want to get one of those. I guess I should also ask, have you ever tried the dessert, Blamage?
No.
It's a, do you know what it is?
It's a French milky kind of.
Yes, exactly what it sounds like.
I haven't tried it, no.
Sweet dessert commonly made with milk or cream and sugar, thickened with rice flour, gelatin, cornstarch, and often flavored with almonds. Blancmange.
Appetizing.
Yeah.
Have you tried it?
No.
Okay, enough dessert talk.
Let's keep moving. Here we go. Number 37, In Excess, Burn For You. What do we think of In Excess, the band?
They're one of the biggest bands, still. So many hits. This one, not that big. I mean, they're bigger and better songs by In Excess. Such a tragic thing that Michael Hutchence passed away. Big loss for pop. And I think, that they're one of the best K-rock bands. And I think K-rock made the band, more or less, getting them into the States.
It's no use pretending that I understand the hide and seek we play with facts. It changes on demand.
This is my favorite In Excess song. We've had this discussion before. While you guys can pinpoint, Chris, you talk about melodies and to me, music, it grabs you or it doesn't.
I actually did a remix, not of In Excess, but of an artist called Los Neto. It's called Dance to the Music. It didn't become a big hit, but me and my friend Boris, we ripped off the melody in Burn For You. Burn For You has a really good melody, but it's only like in one or two places of the song. If they would have put that somewhere else in the song, like in the beginning of the song, and then again after the chorus, this song, I think, should have, would have been better, bigger. You see how damaged I am?
I know.
When it comes to listening to music?
Yeah. Did you
pick everything apart?
Have you produced before?
Not from the beginning, no.
Not try, okay.
No, but a lot of remixes where you try to go in, where is the actual... Where is the melody hidden?
Yeah.
And how can you bring that out? I did a remix of Paul Abdul, Straight Up, and it's the flute. That's just a chord progression. We play that over and over and over and over and over again in the song.
Nice.
I think you should go back and listen to this album.
Yeah, I know. You said this is one of your favorite albums, In Excess albums. And it's your favorite In Excess song.
Yeah.
Of all time.
Yeah.
Which is amazing. Okay.
Yeah, I know. Who knows?
Who knows?
I'm sorry.
All right.
I'm not apologizing.
No, you shouldn't. One guy who does know melody is number 36, Howard Jones, What is Love? I mean, he knows a hook. So he's asking the musical question, what is love? Chris, can you please answer, what is love?
How many artists have a song called What is Love? I mean, there's got to be plenty of them.
I mean, that's what all songs come down to, basically. Like, what is love? What is love?
Now, how am I supposed to live?
Right. Yeah, I know.
What song's got to do with it?
How deep is your love?
I mean, there are a lot of musical questions, but he does answer. I was looking at the lyrics. It starts off actually kind of stalky in that he says, I love you whether or not you love me. I love you even if you think that I don't. Sometimes I find that you doubt my love for you, but I don't mind. Why should I mind? What is love anyway? So then so he asks the question and he says, can anybody love anyone so much that they will never fear, never worry, never be sad? And here we go. The answer is they cannot love this much. Nobody can. This is why I don't mind you doubting. So, getting a little philosophical inside a pop song.
And all we heard was this pop song.
Right. I know. It's
exactly.
But that, right.
That's always what I hear. And then, and you associate it just with the chorus. Whatever the chorus says is what you think the song is about, but it's not necessarily true.
The bad thing about having a great hook, people don't really pay attention to the lyrics because they love the hook.
Yeah.
Just give me the song. What are they singing about? I don't know.
Hello. Sometimes I find you doubt my love for you, but I don't mind.
But usually, you know, when it comes to ballads, that's when you really, you know, oh, listen to that's the lyrics.
Right.
How am I supposed to live without you?
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, that's the same thing. Like another song from 1984 was Bruce Springsteen's Born in the USA. And everyone was just saying, you know, like a patriotic song, Born in the USA. And even our president, Ronald Reagan, thought, oh, you know, this is the most American song you could think of. Yeah. Bruce Springsteen actually came like, this is not what you think it is, Mr. President. It was the hook that drew in Ronald Reagan. And So now we know what is love anyway. It's basically every single pop song is what is love.
What I really enjoy and what I think is so much fun is when in my work today, I'm CEO of four radio stations in Sweden, two of which are national, and I get to meet some of these artists again. And just to mention K-Rock and whatever happened at K-Rock during the 80s, like talking to Howard Jones, they instantly remember everything. They go, oh yeah, oh, I remember this and I remember that and what about this guy? Is he still around? And you know, that connection is, to me, it's worth so much more today than it was back then. I was just a, you know, kid hanging around the station.
Truly is world famous.
It is.
But that's the best, as we said, it's because you don't want to know that you're making history back then, because you're living it without any other pretense.
Yeah.
Great stuff.
Did he still have the hair? Did he still have some kind of hair?
When I saw him, he was bald. So I'm assuming that he's bald.
Completely. No, he has hair.
Really? All right. Yeah. I don't know. When I saw him, it's maybe it was.
Then he shaved it for a while then.
Maybe that was the look and it grew back. Okay.
he had good hair.
At least I think he did.
You know what? Yeah. You hear the music and you look out at the stage and you see what the guy looked like in 84, not what he looks like today. So sometimes I'll close my eyes and just like, oh, the voice sounds exactly the same. And then you look up on stage, like, who is that singing in that impersonating Howard Jones?
I felt that with Casey and the Sunshine Band. I saw that with Casey and the Sunshine Band many years ago, but also past their prime. And I would prefer to have closed my eyes. Loved them. Loved it still, but you know, they sounded great.
Of course. We're going to go to a B-side song from the Thompson Twins. The song is called Passion Planet. This was the B-side to You Take Me Up. Were you familiar with this song, Passion Planet? I know you probably remember.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
And I also know why they played Passion Planet, because You Take Me Up was too slow.
Oh, yeah.
They came out with Hold Me Now, and I think they followed it up with You Take Me Up.
Right.
And then came Lay All Your Love on Me, whatever it was called. Lay Your Hands on Me, yeah.
They played so many.
And they thought Passion Planet was a more fun song.
Yeah.
From the first album, they also played We Are Detectives, which is a very weird song.
Yeah. Yeah, because You Take Me Up only made it up to number 92 on the K-Rock charts. But the B-side, here we are at number 35, and there's Passion Planet.
Swarming around the ceiling, high above the floor. We talk, a touch, a waltz, a giggle. Let's do some more. Surprised by what I'm feeling, spinning through the door. A talk, a touch, a waltz, a giggle. Let's do some more.
Forgotten about this song.
No other radio station played this song.
No. Yeah. And it's hard to get too.
Oh,
before they came out with all the compilations and before streaming audio, it was almost impossible to get hold of. But my favorite, I have to say this, here it comes, favorite B-side with Thompson Twins is Out of the Gap.
Was that a B-side?
That's the B-side of Sisters of Mercy, which is a ballad that came out on a 12-inch. And on the backside of that one is Out of the Gap. That's the medley of Thompson Twins that I did together with Swedish Eagle. That's the first record I got released in the States.
Oh, nice. Okay.
And it was a guy called Dave German at Arista Records that loved the mix that we had on K-Rock. And he said, we're going to put that out. And then I came to Sweden that summer. It must have been back in 84, or if it was summer of 85. No, summer of 84. And I'm listening to Radio Luxembourg, which was the only pan-European radio station that you could listen to across Europe. And they had this chart show once a week where they played, you know, the hottest music in Europe. And they played my medley, which was, to me, it was so big. And it's on the B-side. And it is available. It's the only mega mix I did that is out officially on vinyl and streaming services. That's a B-side too.
There you go. So we can find it if we go. We're able to hear it.
It's on Spotify
or Apple Music. Yeah. Instead of Into the Gap, which was the name of the album, it's Out of the Gap because it contained so many songs from that album. And think about it. There are no drum machines. There is no sync code, nothing. It's all done with vinyl records.
By hand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
That's really cool.
In Swedish Eagle's old apartment in Pasadena.
Oh, nice. He recorded this all, or this was all done in some little apartment in Pasadena?
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
Two turntables and the record. I mean, you can even hear the cracks in some of the records.
Oh, okay. This next, we have another NXS song. And actually, I do really like this song. I Send a Message. Because I guess I like it in that, you know, it's the melody. Like you say the title and I already know the song, you know, I already know the melody of the song. What do you think of this one, Chris?
I think it's a great song. Yeah. It is. Definitely. One of the stronger songs from this album.
Did you follow bands from, like, did it matter where a band was from? Like, oh, this is a band from Australia. This is kind of unique. Like, what? There's so many, you know,
not really.
You never think about bands in terms of country.
If it influences the music in some way, of course, you start looking, where is this band coming from? But usually, if, you know, bands coming from Australia, Canada, or the UK or US, it really doesn't matter. It's, you know.
Yeah.
You can hear the British English, you know, cutting through sometimes, but mostly, you know, it doesn't matter. I will be curious if the band is from Germany or France or, you know, some non-English speaking country. Then it's more interesting. But it never really mattered. I mean, some of the bands I don't even think I knew where they came from.
Yeah. All right, so let's move it. Keep moving. This artist, Billy Idol. You ever heard of this guy? The song's "Catch My Fall." What do you think of Mr. Idol?
I love him. Yeah. I mean, he deserves more cred than he has. I mean, I think Billy Idol falls right in between what was new wave and what was rock.
Yeah.
You know, the girls wouldn't put him up on the wall as a poster because he wasn't cute enough, or if he had this kind of, like, always, you know, his fist and his angry face. They rather put, you know, some of the guys from Spandau Ballet or Duran Duran on the wall. And the rockers, it was too synthy. It was too kind of popish and new wave-ish for the rock audience. So he was kind of right in between. He's one of the very few kind of rockish new wave artists of the 80s. If it would have gone either way, he might have been a bit more popular, but I wouldn't say he wasn't popular. I think he has so many great songs. White Wedding, Rebel Yell, Hot in the City. There are some great songs.
Even later, Blue Highway.
Yeah, well, it was right in the pocket for Holly. I think you touched on it exactly. He was not rock. He was not pop, but he kind of put them both together. And just dangerous enough for Holly is what I'm not heavy metal dangerous, but pop. pop rock, punk, the good mixture, right? I mean, is that, did I touch on that?
That's funny you say it. Yes, and yes. But I did have him on my wall.
That was a selling point. I mean, it wasn't just the music. It was the look of Billy Idol. It was his personality. He sold a lot of that music based on being Billy Idol. That was his brand. I mean, if, you know, I'm sure you love Billy Idol because, you know, like, oh, a new song by Billy Idol. There's Billy Idol being Billy Idol. That's what you wanted, right?
And connecting back to K-Rock, I remember him riding in on his motorcycle in the back parking lot of K-Rock. And I mean, in what other way would he make an entrance?
Right. Yes.
Exactly. The duo, we've talked about this before when talking about Billy Idol, the duo of Billy Idol and Steve Stevens, to me, that was very appealing. I love the guitar. He's another, you know, recognizable guitar sound.
Those two were a good partnership. That was, you know, like Steve Tyler, Joe Perry type thing. You need your David Lee Roth and your Eddie Van Halen to make it work. And I think he found a good partner with Steve Stevens.
I have the time, so I will sing, yeah. I'm just a boy, but I will win, yeah. Lost song of lovers, fellow travelers, yeah. Leave me sad and hollow, out at a word. It could happen to you, so think for yourself. If I should stumble, catch my fall, yeah. If I should stumble, catch my fall, catch my fall. If I should stumble, catch my fall.
You were talking about Billy Idol being a brand and making it a look. Number 32 is by Animotion and their song Obsession. Did you watch the video? Where they're all dressing up, they're trying to figure out their look or something. I don't know what's going on. This video, the video is a mess. The song is, I don't know. It just, I know it was a big hit, but it just, everything about this just drives me crazy.
Do you know that it's a cover song?
Really? Okay, they didn't even write the song. So they're...
No. The song was written by Holly Knight, and she wrote the best, Love is a Battlefield.
Yeah, yeah.
A bunch of great songs. So... the songwriting in this song is excellent, and she put it out together with some, I forgot his name.
Michael DeBar.
Yeah.
You are an obsession. I cannot sleep. I am a possession, an open at your feet. There is no balance, no equality. Be still, I will not.
They just add the synthesizer, and I think it's like very energetic. I think it's a great song. It really is. But
I can understand why it was a hit.
The video is so bad.
Like they went through a closet of some sort of wardrobe at a studio. Like, what do you want to wear? Let's just wear everything. I don't know. You want a medieval?
I'll be a Roman.
Yeah, I'll be the Roman.
Fun for them, not so interesting for the viewer.
But yeah,
and this was their only hit too. I think.
No, actually, they did have, I don't have the book with me, but they had, in 1990, they had another hit. Holly, could you have access to the web?
Is it Room to Move?
Yeah, that was it.
Yeah.
I don't think K-Rock played the Room to Move song, but that was another, I think that was like another top 10 hit or something like that.
Yeah, number 9
yeah.
in the U.S.
They did live to see another hit.
Wow.
I'm sure they're still playing the revival circuit somewhere, you know, when everything opens up.
And here's our song one more time.
Yeah.
That's a difference. And I meant to make that point when we were talking about Howard Jones. It's a marked difference between someone like that, like Howard Jones, and these 80s, you know, these 80s shows where the bands are playing, you know, two or three songs. I would like to see a full Howard Jones set, you know, but some of these others, you know, like Bow Wow Wow, I'm good to see, you know, I Want Candy and be done.
This is a song that's still played today. I'm sure people think fondly on this song.
I think it's, again, it's because it's a well-written song.
Yeah.
It is.
Yes. Very catchy. Our final song. This is one that I think this has aged well. This is by OMD. The song is Locomotion. I think it still holds up well today. Where are you on this, Chris? Not so much. Okay.
When I saw we were going to talk about this song, I said, no, this is one of my favorite bands. And I went to see them just, you know, before the pandemic too, because right now there are so many bands from the 80s going around Europe before the pandemic, that is.
Yeah.
And I saw OMD in a small club here in Stockholm. But Locomotion is, I think it's one of their worst songs.
Okay.
And actually the, you know, I was with the band when they came out with Enola Gay, like early 80s. And I think Junk Culture was their worst album. Also Tesla Girls is like, I felt like they lost it on that album. But there are so many other great songs they've made through the years. But no, Locomotion is not one of them.
Break our tie. Is this a good song or a bad song, Holly?
This is not my favorite.
OMD song.
It's not. I do like Enola Gay, but I'm all over the map. You know, I'm all over the map with them. I also don't love Tesla Girls, which I think we talked about earlier in the countdown.
Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not one of my favorites.
Crossing into the ocean for the sake of locomotion.
You know, I think that's my earworm right there, and that's all it takes.
Yeah, but then you get the next part. Cross the ocean, gonna take a locomotion.
All right, I believe that's a slight exaggeration, my friend. I
know the band themselves didn't like these songs because when they were in Pretty in Pink, oh,
John Hughes movies.
Yeah,
was it in a movie? Was it Locomotion in?
Yeah, I know them. They didn't like making those songs themselves.
Okay.
Because they thought it was too pop. But those songs are iconic 80s songs.
Yeah.
As well as the early synthesizer stuff they did on their first albums. They're all great. And they're still making great stuff today.
Right.
You were talking about that the song actually, you know, stood through time. But their new stuff sounds like the old stuff, but it's updated. This is one of the bands that I feel been able, just like Depeche Mode, been able to kind of keep their sound but make it, you know, today.
Yeah, that's what we kind of touched on.
There's a song called, an album and a song called Punishment of Luxury, which is a great example of what they sound like today, which still immediately brings you back to their sound back in the 80s, but it's fresh.
The punishment of luxury is in the air.
Going back to the John Hughes stuff, that like if you leave, we're talking about if you leave, right?
Yeah.
That they didn't like.
They told me
they liked the outcome. You said they didn't like doing it.
Well, their hardcore fans didn't like what they were doing. Mm-hmm. They became kind of too pop, and all of a sudden they were in this big, huge blockbuster movie singing about, you know, love instead of genetic engineering and telegraphs and electricity and whatever and so I guess they wouldn't play the songs at a concert if they didn't like them.
That's true.
I mean, some bands embrace it. The Cure was a perfect example of a band that was dark, and all of a sudden they started singing Friday I'm in Love, and but then they still play them to this day. And I think they embrace both parts of the yin and yang of their early days to what they morphed into.
But it's like Depeche Mode trying to get through a concert without playing Just Can't Get Enough.
Yes. Can't do that. Yeah. Why would you even consider that? Come on.
They must hate that song.
I don't know. I think a lot of bands now, probably at one point they were tired of it, and but then they realized, like, you know what, this, you know, Paul McCartney's always going to sing Hey Jude. It's just, it brings people so much joy to hear these songs. That one in particular, like, Just Can't Get Enough. Like, you just, they, I think they just see the joy in the audience when they play that now. Maybe like 5 years after the song, you know, they played it at every show. Like, do we have to play this song again? But but now, you know, like, I think time is a good indicator of how well a song has aged.
Chris, have you ever interviewed them, Depeche Mode?
No, I met them a few times, but I spent a night at K-Rock together with Vince Clark talking about synthesizers.
Nice.
Which was like one of my greatest memories. Erasure was playing at the Palace in Hollywood. And after the show, they were going to K-Rock to record an interview with Swedish Eagle. So they find out that I'm going to K-Rock too. And I had this small little VW Scirocco, which was kind of a sports version of the Bug.
Yeah.
And they asked me if I'll give them a ride. Yeah. So I say, sure. So Vince Clark and anybody climbs into the back seat of this small little tiny car. Mm-hmm. And I drive them down to K-Rock, followed by, you know, 20 other cars down to K-Rock in Burbank. They were in Burbank at that time. And then they went up, they did their interview, and they hung around the radio station. And I ended up talking synthesizers with Vince Clark for about 2 hours, you know, different presets and how to get different sounds and how they worked on this record. And to me, you know, loving making music and, you know, and with Depeche Mode and Erasure being some of my favorite bands, this was a dream come true. I'll never forget it.
Yeah, it's like sitting with Clayton Kershaw on how to throw a curveball or something. Like, you know, someone you've admired, or like Michael Jordan teaching you the jump shot. It's like, you know, that's very cool. That, especially, you know, a fan. What was the thing you've taken away, that you took away from that 2 hour conversation?
That I had the best synthesizer module at home already, which was the MKS-50, Roland MKS-50, which is the rack mount version of the Juno 2 synthesizer. He said, you know, you can do more incredible things than you think with this little, you know, module. And you really can. There are so many sounds in that little thing that you just have to experiment.
So he validated you.
Well, I basically used the presets. He told me, don't use the presets, go in there and experiment. That was the big takeaway from it. You know, you need to modulate the different things.
Lessons from a pro. That's amazing.
That's great. Yeah, he probably wanted to travel. He was probably tired of travel with the entourage. That's probably why he stepped into your car. Like, all right, here's a...
I never thought of that. You know, were they going to, you know, grab a cab or...
Yeah, rock stars don't magically transport from one place to another. They have to, they get in cars just like you and I.
In the backseat of my little truck.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, that works just the same as you know, it's a limo.
Uber.
This has been so much fun. This is really cool. Thank you so much, really. Chris, for stepping into our virtual studios and doing this.
This was so fun.
Yeah. Anything you want to plug? Anything you want to mention?
Well, I could plug one thing. If you got Spotify, my playlist on Spotify and on Apple Music, just look for Swedish Chris. All my playlists are top 101. They're top 101 of something. So I have the top 101 of the K-Rock Flashback, which is basically my favorite songs from the time period when I was at K-Rock. I left K-Rock at, I think it was late 85, beginning of 86, because I got asked to do the mixes on Power 106. And that's when Boris and Chris started doing the mix shows and the power mixes on Power. I remember Eagle was so disappointed the day I left. I mean, it took 6 months and Power was number one.
Yeah. And I remember at that time, K-Rock started playing remixes as well. Like, they were trying to compete with Power at the time, play these extended remixes.
It was Boris and me doing all the mixes and the Dancing Saturday Night and the club mixes. And that got us into all the nightclubs. And, you know, did mixes for Jody Watley, for Bobby Brown, Paul Abdul. It was such a great time.
Yeah.
I have all my top 101s on Spotify and on Apple Music. So just look for Swedish Chris.
Swedish Chris.
It was so nice to see you. Thank you so much for doing this. Thank
you for asking me.
Yeah, thank you. I mean,
it's too much fun to talk about the old times. it was great, a great part of my life. So I'm really proud of it too.
Yeah. Oh, that's nice. Master curator, master remixer. Thank you so much for joining us. This is so much.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Another episode in the books. How do you feel about it, Holly?
I feel like that was one for the ages.
Really? You're gonna make this an ages episode?
I think this should be an ages episode.
This is going into the archives.
Into the archive, in the What Difference Does It Make Museum.
Yes.
He was a great guest. He was, you know, he's obviously knowledgeable at the music and comes to it from a different, you know, with a different perspective as someone who does remixes.
Yeah, story is amazing. And I mean, it's great. Thank you, Holly, for bringing him in. It's nice to get an international flavor into our podcast. We've been talking to local people and getting their feedback, but this is the first time on our countdown that we're looking at someone who, although he spent a lot of time at K-Rock, he has this Swedish background, so it's kind of a unique perspective on this music. If you loved what you heard, 5 stars. If you want to learn more about What Difference Does It Make, what should someone do about that, Holly?
You should follow us on social media. On Facebook, WDDIM Podcast. Same on Twitter and Instagram, WDDIM Podcast. And check us out on YouTube. We're putting up lots of behind-the-scenes stuff. We've got lots of fun stuff up there. So check us out at the What Difference Does It Make podcast on YouTube. You can go to our website, where you can also sign up for our newsletter at wddimpodcast.com.
Also, thanks to Pantheon Podcast. We are a proud member of the Pantheon Podcast family. And until next week, this is Dave.
This is Holly.
Check you later.
Over and out.
Of households that start the year with Peloton are still active a year later.
All because of a fancy bike?
It's not just a bike. Peloton makes treadmills too.
Eh, all treadmills are the same.
Our treadmills can adjust speed and incline automatically so you never break your stride. Whether you're squeezing in a power walk or training for a marathon, Peloton can help you achieve your fitness goals. 92% stick with it. So can you. Try the Peloton Tread risk-free with a 30-day home trial. New members only. Not available in remote locations. See additional terms at onepeloton.com/home-trial.
Right now, you can get free carpet installation from the Home Depot. So while we're putting in your new carpet, you'll have more time to take care of the lawn, get started on dinner, or just lay down and relax on your new carpet after it's installed. Ah. Get your free carpet installation started with the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Minimum purchase of $4.99. Exclusions apply. U.S. only. See store for details.